questions on, you know, what we've heard so far, both on Catherine's talk and on what we've heard from Martin so far.
Thank you very much for your talk. I was just thinking, within society, I think there's a lot of stigma still about dementia. I'm just wondering how you got in your church for people to get to the stage where they could discuss it and then come up with plans about what you would offer, or sort of how discussions started off, because I can just imagine in some churches it might still be a bit sort of hush-hush, we don't want to talk about it, and would not be... People might feel still uncomfortable if there are sort of elderly men and women wandering up and down in the service, maybe saying words that you don't normally hear in a church, and the sort of behaviour that possibly could go with later stages of dementia. How you sort of got talking about it with individuals and how within your church to get over the stigma.
I have to say that I'm not at all wanting to suggest that we're sort of any better than anybody else, but I genuinely haven't encountered that as a problem in the church, actually. I mean, I can think we've always been a church that's relatively had quite a lot of older people in it. And even going back to when I was, because I'm back in the church that I grew up in, and even then I can remember there being, you know, one or two older folks who sometimes did things which were a little odd and nobody batted an eyelid, and clearly thinking back they had dementia, and that was just accepted that that's who they were, and you know, nobody would sort of say that they shouldn't be there or they shouldn't do that or anything. I think that the things that we're doing with older people in the church, I don't know that we consciously thought the process out really in that way. I think there's just been a need that you know we've become aware of, and somebody's just come up with things as an idea of, you know, well, we could try doing this. We do some residential home services as well, and I think originally they arose because we had church members who'd gone into some of those homes and people realised, well, you know, they won't be able to get to church anymore, so why don't we do a service in the home. I think it just sort of happened really. I suppose the background of my church, probably that things are a bit more flexible and informal, that's sort of the nature of things, but certainly outside of my church, you know, there are negative attitudes to people with dementia, which do very much still need to be broken down. And I think the profile that dementia and Alzheimer's disease particularly are getting at the moment is very helpful.
There's a question over there. I was just going to add something to what Catherine said. I've got enough rope here. Well, then you might have a roving... You've got a roving mic for the audience. Certainly in our church, we've recently had one of our previous elders, his wife died in a Christian care home, but she had quite severe dementia, and really towards the end was very non-communicative, almost in a fetal position. But there was a team of people who would go in and visit her on a regular basis, which was a comfort to her husband, and I think to her as well, because sometimes she would respond to people singing to her, and that would be, you know, a response of something that she recognised. Is a question, I think, from Peter, if we can get the mic over there, otherwise just shout. We need a boom.
Thanks. Well, thank you so much for both of those talks. What came to mind, made me stick my hand up just now, was something Catherine said about people with dementia, abbreviated to PWD, but these are people. And what seems to be coming out of both talks is this sense that we are whole persons. And I want to come back to Martin about this notion of the extreme of splitting people into body and soul, or body, mind and spirit, and the problems that arise with that. So you say it's all organic, or it's all mental, or it's all cognitive, or it's all spiritual. And I remember hearing a very good CMF talk many years ago now, and I can't remember, I think it was Marc Chapuis de Saint-Onge gave it. Anyway, it was about this wholeness of the person, and I think there's something very Christian about understanding that we are whole people, comprising body, which is the physical bit, and mind, if you like, the cognitive bit, and spirit, which, if you like, is the spiritual, the connection with God. Soul is a funny one. It sort of comes into both, and I think we have to be careful with our terminology so we know what we mean. But linking that to the notion of Trinity, which Martin mentioned earlier as an article of faith, and the scriptures don't systematically tell us about the Trinity, but they certainly tell us that the Trinity is a truth. And that just as God is spirit in relation to Son, in relation to Father, so we are people with these parts, but in relation to one another. And in the context of mental illness, in the context of dementia, it's really good to see people as people, even if they appear to be, and I was told off for using the word alcoholic the other day, even if they suffer from alcohol dependence, even if they suffer from drug dependence and appear to be, or even if they're in the fetal position from devastating end-stage dementia, they're still people. That's really what I wanted to say. But I think there's some comment there from Martin particularly about this danger of splitting people into bits.
Yeah, I think the particular danger is that beyond the division between body and the rest, it is extremely difficult to be clear about those kind of separations. So theologically, there'd be those who would go for a tripartite view of body, soul and spirit. Others would go for a bipartite, mainly because it isn't absolutely that clear in the Bible. You know, how many parts are we? And as you said there, the mind, the soul, the spirit, which is which? I think the baseline is we are fearfully and wonderfully made, incredibly complex creatures. We do recognise that when the body dies, there is a part, the real you, although that isn't to imply the body isn't the real, but you know what I mean? That continues. But to start dividing, it can be useful to get our minds around what's happening, but actually it's where kind of systematization goes too far when we start thinking we are actually those segregated parts rather than they're just useful labels to emphasize a different angle, but the angles aren't disconnected from one another.
I think there was a question over here.
I'm in the same church as Charlotte, and I actually help out quite a bit with our church lunch club, and I've also been called in on other duties. And it's more a statement than a question, that yes, we've talked about those who who seem to be in quite late stage dementia, but an example within our own lunch club is it's been going for 30 years, and of course some of the people who used to help cook the meal and serve it, etc., 25 years ago are now the clientele, and so we need to be careful that we don't just sort of have a case of you sit there and we'll serve you. We need to also find practical ways of those who, yes, have been really strong disciples, strong pillars of the church, to have a role to do something practical as well. I mean, recently I've been asked, oh, Paul, can you help set up the communion vessels, because I'm not going to use their name, because so-and-so, she keeps forgetting to do it for us, and she's getting the term, but this is what I've heard. She's getting a bit dotty and a bit forgetful. Yet, I mean, I don't want to override this person, because physically she needs a stick and she gets around rather slowly, but she's still got capacity to assist in practical matters as well. So my plea is not to just expect people to sit and receive, let them also give.
Thank you. Any reflections on that?
Just to say that I think we've found that a little bit with the holiday at home thing, because when we started off, you know, it was very much the people came along and we did things for them. But now with some of the participants who've wanted to, you know, come and help in the kitchen, you know, give the food out, that sort of thing. And we, you know, we've been really happy to help them do that, as long as that's not meaning that they miss out on things. But also we've realised that looking at the team, apart from myself and one or two other people, actually most of the team are over 55, which I think is the cut-off for it. So actually, if we carried that to, you know, to the letter, then we would have no team left. So we have adopted a much more flexible approach. But yeah, I think with people with dementia, it is really important that we don't sort of suddenly decide that means they can no longer do anything. And especially in the church, people need to still have a role and still be able to make some kind of contribution, some way of serving the Lord still, even though that might be in a very limited way. So.
Yes.
My wife went to India a couple of years ago, look at the palliative care setup there. And what she noted there was that India's now discovered it's got a lot of old people, as people are living longer. And they've got a rather slight, unusual way of dealing with their elderly population. They do have some residential homes, a lot of them missionary hospitals, and so forth. But there, they don't have a lot of staff running them. The people themselves run the homes, do the cooking, and look after each other with a minimal staff content. So, I mean, obviously as people get more and more frail and less able to look after themselves, the healthier people look after the less well people. But I just wonder if that's possibly a model for the UK?
Are you thinking sort of within a church context that, I mean, state-run,
private-run, church-run?
I suppose, I mean, again, what Catherine was saying about being salt and light, I mean, if churches are able to move that forwards and be the leaders in that, and again, Pilgrim's Homes presumably would be an example of that sort of thing. I don't know how much input they have from their own residents, or whether, you know, and they allow them to use the capacity that they've got to facilitate that. I mean, even it's a simple, and there's a patient I know who's got... was early onset dementia in her 60s in an ordinary care home, and they used to allow her to do all her stuff because she was physically quite fit. And often that situation, patients with Alzheimer's and dementia are often quite physically fit. But yeah, I'm sure that's a potential. It's a case of somebody having the impetus to take it forwards. Feedback on that.
I was just going to say that I think when that does happen in some homes in this country, I think it happens in a rather tokenistic way. But some small homes I've come across that have really tried to engage with that a bit more seriously, and for example, will allow, you know, some of the lady residents that want to come into the kitchen. I'm being sexist there. It just happened that one of the homes I'm thinking of was all female, but they used to allow the ladies to come into the kitchen and bake with the cook. But there are enormous kind of health and safety obstacles to be overcome there, and I think this is when the big firms that run homes are just not interested. They just say, no, you can't do that. Some of the smaller run homes are much more, you know, focused on the needs of the individuals and are willing to try and work hard to find ways around those bureaucratic obstacles, but they are considerable, because I know the problems that we have on our own unit with trying to get around some of these things. So Pilgrim Homes do have a spectrum of care, from nursing care at, you know, the very dependent end, and sort of extra sheltered housing at the other end, where people still have some independence. But I don't think they would do activities communally. It just means that it's more like having a flat and your own kitchen, and you can still prepare meals for yourself.
So my grandma was in a Pilgrim's Home in Wellsborough, which I think the home is actually closed now, unfortunately. But so they had, the way it was set up there at the time, there was some flats where some couples lived with various needs, and then my grandma needed sort of some nursing care, but mentally was very well. And there was quite a lot of people with dementia there as well, and the different people led different groups. It was really such a beautiful place, because different people would get up and do little talks, different residents, and they used to look after each other. If they'd noted, you know, Marjorie hadn't taken her pills, they'd be like, nudging her and say, your pills, you know. We all sorts of little They were really caring for each other. Different people looked after each other, you know, carried each other's bags or helped each other to the toilet. And so I think it works quite well in pilgrim homes from my observation.
Question over there. John? Keeping you fit today.
Someone else might be
ready for the work to do this.
My question is for Martin. He hasn't had many questions, I think. Essentially, yeah, I found it interesting how you gave us food for thought in terms of looking at mental illness from a multi sort of functional aspect. Particularly, I think, during your talk, I felt more about depression than anything else. And I wondered if there are any models in the Bible or even from your own experience to do with other mental illnesses, such as schizophrenia or something like that, because my own prejudice would be to think of that as perhaps slightly different from depression at some stages of its severity.
Right. Yeah. Interesting question. Yes, I suppose I'm trying to keep fairly general in what I'm dealing with, but my own view would be that these things are on a spectrum, and so again, we tend to nicely want to categorise, and if we allow the kind of depression anxiety area to creep out of the it's all physical, we'd tend to like to keep schizophrenia, certain more psychotic syndromes in the physical, you know, the definite chemical stuff. I just wouldn't like to draw neat lines there and suggest that there's enough research that would indicate there's a number of factors probably in the background and makeup. I think certainly there's indications of responses to medication that would be stronger in some illnesses than in others. So, you know, not wanting to pin it down, just recognise that probably with any illness there's a number of factors that are going to affect it. And what are we winning by pinning it down to one? We're probably losing helping them by doing a number of things. So we'll pin all our hopes on the medication and leave the rest. But if we look at every aspect and do what we can for every aspect, then I think we're on more of a winning line, really.
There you go. So my question is for Catherine. So as you were presenting, clearly we are facing an aging population. I see that in my practice in cardiology. When I was training, I wouldn't be, you know, seeing a 95-year-old having an angioplasty, but that pretty much is the norm now. At least, you know, 50% of the patients that I treat are 80 and over, and there will be at least one 95-year-old. So clearly that is the reality. We are, in the days to come, we are faced with the fact that we are facing aging population. And clearly dementia is, from your percentage that you quoted, 20% of patients is a huge number. So in terms of management of these people, say, for example, I get phoned with a 95-year-old, and is there is a discrepancy in the management of the clinical condition in patients if they have dementia, for example, if they have something else? Are people getting turned down of the treatment because of their condition? If that is the case, should we be, you know, looking into these population more aggressively? Fair enough, they have dementia. Should we be treating them? And the other thing is, clearly there is a huge generation gap, and should we be bringing this to the attention of our juniors, for example, the students, and, you know, start training them way from their, you know, early stages of caring or looking after older patients, older population with dementia? And should we as Christians be salt in the light and sort of taking the step to, you know, find, fair enough, this patient, you know, has this problem, he's old or she's old and she have dementia, but we will look after them if they come in with a problem. should we be, as clinicians, as people, medics working, looking after these people, should we be taking a bit more further steps? I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
I think we're coming back again to being, you know, thinking about them as a person and being making person-centred decisions about people. So not just saying, no, we're not going to do that procedure on that patient because they've got a label of having dementia, but thinking it out on an individual case-by-case basis. I mean, I think attitudes are changing. You know, I think even in the time that I've been practicing, there's been a huge shift in what we are willing to do with older people. You know, procedures which in the past we would have just said there's no point doing it at that age. I think there's more of a recognition now that, you know, people in their 70s now have got the health of a 50-year-old sort of 20 or 30 years ago. So, you know, it's often worth taking the risk of doing some of these procedures. But I do still come across an awful lot of people just looking at the label of somebody having dementia, or it might be, you know, somebody having another label like schizophrenia, and being denied care just on the basis of that label. So we do need to break that down, and I think, as you say, that is going to be about educating the current generation of doctors, you know, both while they're at medical school, but then when they get out of medical school, you know, not exposing them to negative attitudes. That's going to take time, really, to chip away at and to change. That there is, you know, a lot of work to be done, I think, on attitudes in the health service.
Probably last two questions. So, yeah, John. Or was that Laura?
This is a question for Martin, just about all the it's alls. I was just thinking about the whole thing of environment and sort of a fallen world, and, you know, quite a lot of patients sometimes with depression, particularly anxiety, it's things that are happening to them, isn't it, that are all part of it, in terms of the cause, and then looking at therapies as well, and often other people's sin, isn't it? You know, you're living with a spouse who is abusive or just very controlling, or you know, in families there's a mother-in-law who's very controlling, or all those kinds of things, and how you approach that in the counselling.
Well, you've just given me another all to add the next time I do this. Yes, it's all the environment, it's all the circumstances. It's a less common extreme for people to fall to these days, isn't there? But there has been a big stress 30, 40 years ago of the kind of social end of things, where people were feeling that if only you could put people in a better environment, then all would be well. So that was the extreme of it. But again, it's a very important aspect, isn't it? Of how to, of the effects that people's environment, their situations, their families will have upon them. And just another thing that has to be looked at, I think. Yeah.
Can I just comment on that?
Yeah.
Of course, the whole nature-nurture debate is quite a big thing, and I mean, putting it almost simply, it can be, in the secular view, very deterministic in terms of the genes load the gun and nature, the environment, pulls the trigger, and there's not much you can do about it, and you become disempowered. But I think looking at it in Scripture, responsibility comes in very much in terms of, yes, we've got that nature, we've got that situation we've grown up in, but we're still responsible for actions within that, and to be conscious that there's a bias to sin in all that as well. So I think it's trying to bring us that response rather than blaming your parents and the genes and so on.